It was only by the merest accident that I came to pay a visit to Autarkia, that paragon of 20th century states. At the time, I was on my way home from a world tour. I'd made a pile of money out of the publication of a book of poems. So much money, indeed, that after buying a new car and a string of racehorses and making handsome presents to all my friends, I found I had enough left not only to pay my income tax, but also to take me on an extended tour abroad. By the time I left for home again, my book of poems was in its fourth edition. The money was simply rolling in, and my bank account was threatening to burst at the seams. So I found I could indulge myself further by chartering a special plane to take me on the last lap of my journey. Unfortunately, or rather, as it turned out, very fortunately, a series of minor mishaps overtook us. First, my pilot dropped the bubble out of his spirit level, and while he was fumbling for it on the floor of the plane, he lost his sense of direction. As a precaution, he had taken a pair of compasses on the trip, but these were of no use at all. On the contrary, they led us to a further complication. We found ourselves describing circles over a strange piece of territory, which neither of us could at first identify. In the end, it came to a forced landing. It wasn't long before I realized that we were in Autarkia. Apart from the slight worry at having lost our way, I wasn't at all displeased with this. Like the rest of you, I'd heard so many rumors about this country that I was, in fact, delighted to have the chance of satisfying my curiosity. Autarkia is, as you all know, reputed to be the last word in modernity. For that reason, it is, of course, practically a closed book to those who've not been there. Since all the publicity and information services, including, I need hardly say, literature and the arts, are under direct control by the government, it is quite impossible to discover by documentary evidence what conditions there are really like. And since it is almost impossible to get permission to enter the country, little is known by outsiders about the manners and customs of the Autarkians, except that it seems to be generally agreed that their customs officials have no manners at all. The truth is, as you will know from your digest reading, that Autarkia has already come close to realizing the dream of every 20th century state, that of cutting itself off completely from the rest of the world. It has succeeded, for instance, in reducing trade with outside countries to the absolute minimum. Almost all the things it needs are by this time produced internally. Synthetic bananas, rice and cotton grown by hydroponics, wines with French-sounding names, chemical coffee and cocoa, plastic bicycles, woolen clothes made from seaweed, artificial beefsteak made from sawdust. Well, I could name you 100 such commodities. In point of fact, Autarkia imports only one commodity. Having an exceptionally cold climate, it obtains heat from the Sahara Desert. Blocks of heat are frozen and then shipped in refrigerated space to Autarkia in order to provide the inhabitants with much-needed warmth. Being a completely up-to-date and progressive state, Autarkia makes no attempt to pay in full for these imports of heat. It merely pays the interest on the debt incurred. And in order to do this, it has developed an export trade in dried heads. In normal times of political tension, these are provided in sufficient quantity by unsuccessful politicians. In periods of relative quiet, an auxiliary supply is obtained from members of the academic staffs of the universities. This, indeed, being the more economical source, since there is in such cases no need to go to the expense of drying the heads, nature and culture between them having already completed that process. You will, I know, wish me to say a word or two about what happened to my pilot and myself after we had made our forced landing. We found ourselves on a broad expanse of turf, which must have contained several hundred acres. I had once recognized this as a golf course. I was puzzled by its flatness and found out later that the Autarkians have made golf their national game completely rational. Every fairway was as level as a billiard table. There were no bunkers to obstruct play. The greens were funnel-shaped to facilitate holing out. In fact, everything had been done that you can possibly think of to make the game accurate and scientific. Of course, only those who are in good odour with the government are allowed to use these links. Those who are not in favour, the majority, are compelled to play three times a week on a huge expanse of dune country nearby, with nothing but loose sand from end to end of it. Soon after landing, we were taken in charge by two officials dressed like beefeaters, wearing gas respirators, and were conveyed 20 miles or so by car to Sisyphus, the capital city. I know that it is customary for travelers abroad to discuss the transport arrangements, the alcoholic amenities, the quality of the soap in hotel bathrooms, and other vital matters. I do not intend to weary you with a detailed account of what happened to us during our brief stay in Ortakia. That would be altogether too tedious. My time will be much better occupied in describing to you the tremendous advances this nation has made in the techniques of civilized living. Perhaps the greatest triumph to have been achieved so far in this astonishing country is that women have by this time completely got the upper hand. No male is permitted to own property, propose marriage, run a bank account, give up his seat to a woman in a jet-propelled bus, go fishing on Sunday, smoke tobacco, choose his own library books, sit about in braces, or do any of the other things traditionally associated with masculine privilege. It is 10 years since the vote was taken away from men. Incidentally, democracy has been carried to new heights in this country by the adoption, some 2 years ago, of the principle of votes for animals. There was talk at the time of restoring voting privileges to men as a logical extension of the new policy, but it came to nothing, chiefly because the vote itself has come to mean little or nothing in Ortakia. The work of government is all done by a permanent and hereditary bureaucracy, consisting mostly of women, under the direct personal command of Madam Onions, the female dictator, who is known affectionately to her subjects as the strong woman. We had the pleasure of meeting Madam Onions on several occasions. It was quite an experience. There is still, by the way, a parliament, but the members are no longer put to the bother of speaking or voting. Each has his own gramophone record, prepared by the Department of Propaganda and Education, which is played whenever it is his turn to speak. And all decisions are made by Madam Onions. This saves a great deal of disagreement and obstruction and makes for smooth, streamlined running of the country's affairs. There's one thing in particular about which the Ortakians cannot be accused of half-heartedness, and that is soil erosion. Whereas we are content to leave this to the casual activities of amateurs, in Ortakia, the state organizes and superintends soil erosion on a gigantic scale and entirely systematically. Water is pumped into huge dams on the tops of hills and sluiced down the valleys. This is in accord with the unceasing national campaign to get rid of dirt. Behind it lies, however, the further intention of preventing the illicit production of food. The food industry is a state monopoly in Ortakia, the profits from which pay the wages, salaries, and bonuses of the large army of bureaucrats. The state has its own forests from which sawdust is obtained, and food of all kinds is manufactured from this. We were astonished to be told, after our first dinner in Ortakia, a 7-course meal, by the way, that every item on the menu, from soup to ice cream and cheese straws, was manufactured out of state sawdust. It is, by the way, quite illegal for private people to plant or to own trees. The penalties are extremely severe, and there is very little bootlegging in food, even during the famine period of the year, which usually lasts from early winter until late autumn. The senior bureaucrats and their guests are, of course, exempted from famine. I must tell you that Ortakia has brilliantly solved another 20th century problem, that of city traffic. This has been done by the simple method of banning pedestrians from the streets. It is necessary to obtain a license to become a pedestrian. The fee is a substantial one, and one is only allowed to walk on footpaths, and then only if one does so in a respectful manner, raising one's hat politely to every car and truck that passes. Trespassing on the roadway by pedestrians is a serious offence. To knock down a motor car or a truck is a hanging matter. Let me say a word about the economic foundations of Ortakia. Of the heavy industries, the chief one is horse racing. Here again, gigantic strides have been made towards complete rationalisation. The most startling instance of progress is that the horses have been got rid of. The members of the racing public sit in front of television screens, watching horse racing scenes taken from old movie reels, and laying their bets by telephone. The placings are decided by drawing names out of a hat. This new system is extremely successful. There are no dull moments. Every race is packed with thrills and can be watched in comfort from an armchair or even a bed. The laws of chance apply fully and quite fairly and guarantee plenty of excitement in return for the money one loses. An additional advantage gained from doing without horses is that the oats saved are turned into fertilizer, which is used in the state forests, thus helping to increase the supply of sawdust for food. And now let me tell you something about the education system of Autarkia. The common sense and a feeling of responsibility to the nation have at long last triumphed over the older policy directed at helping human beings to realize themselves, as sentimentalists used to express it. There's no nonsense about the education system of Autarkia. Every child is now trained rigorously in some functional occupation that will serve the ends of state policy and is allowed to do nothing else. If we are to hold our place in the modern world, said the Minister of Propaganda and Education recently, we must make every citizen a cog, a happy, smiling, singing, contented cog in the smooth-running machine of the state. Only thus can we succeed in preserving those traditional liberties which are more precious than life itself. In these words, we find the keynote of the Autarkian education system. Even the higher education has been remodeled completely along these lines. In the universities, there are chairs of riveting, ice cream making, boot clicking, paint spraying, handle turning, and dozens of other useful activities. Classical studies, literature, philosophy, and other forms of mental thumb twiddling, which used to be called with unconscious irony the humanities, are now banned as subversive activities. The Autarkians have a genuine love of progress and are busy building a happier world. But speaking of their schools, I must not forget to mention one most remarkable instance of the way in which they have forged ahead, and that is in the matter of sex education, which they take very seriously indeed. In all primary schools, there are regular classes for the teachers, for they are provided by the pupils with the very latest knowledge. I would have you know that in Autarkia, the arts are not neglected. The Autarkian government has a high sense of the importance of tradition and culture, and fully appreciates the role that art and literature have to play in the drama of history and the evolution of the human spirit. Every senior bureaucrat has two specially chosen writers attached to his staff. Their duty is to gather materials and write his biography. Similarly, he has on his staff an artist, whose function it is to paint his portrait at frequent intervals, so that posterity may have a complete record of the personalities associated with the glory of the Autarkian regime. For both writers and artists, the expression of private thoughts is, of course, strictly forbidden, as being contrary to the principles governing the Autarkian way of life. The Un-Autarkian Activities Committee constantly supervises the conduct of artists and writers and quickly checks any tendencies towards irresponsible personal expression. If you ask me to give you a concise notion of the social and political ideals underlying Autarkian life, I can sum them up in one word, the word freedom. The Autarkian attitude towards freedom can be described only as one of worship. This spiritual goal is like a great light shining above the pathway of life, leading them onward towards ever better and brighter things. The national motto, inscribed on every public building and on every banner, is indeed freedom through conformity. Freedom, they explain, is the end, and conformity the means. On this principle, the political philosophy of the Autarkian state is based. I feel personally that it was a very great privilege to have been given the opportunity of inspecting at close hand this latest and most promising chapter in human history, unfolding itself before my very eyes. And I must say that certain rumours I had heard previously about the inhospitable reception given to visitors turned out to be entirely unfounded, at any rate in the experience of my pilot and myself. Wherever we went, we were showered with bundles of most illuminating propaganda material, pamphlets, posters, reports, even full-length history books. We formed many friendships, and when we came to leave that happy country, we were sorrowful indeed. At our final interview with Madame Onions, we wept unrestrainedly. I'm aware that I have not told you very much about our day-to-day experiences during our fortnight's stay in Autarkia. I'm very much afraid that any curiosity you may have about these matters must wait until some other occasion, when we can talk more privately. I gave a solemn promise to the Minister of Propaganda and Education that on our return home we should not fall into the heresy of personal expression. I hope, however, that I have managed to convey to you something of the infectious enthusiasm, the forward-looking optimism of the Autarkian people. I am convinced that future generations of humanity, looking back on the murk and darkness of the early 20th century, will agree that it was Autarkia that led the van of progress and showed mankind the pathway to brighter and happier things.